From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. Oregon state government a decade or so ago might have been described as routine, if not a little boring. Over the last few years, however, the goings-on in Salem have been anything but. A governor resigning in disgrace and a secretary of state following suit highlight the major controversies that have hit the state capital. Today on Oregon on the Record, you'll hear from my colleague Lauren Dake from OPB about the current run to become Oregon's next Secretary of State and how the two candidates on the Democratic side are campaigning to restore trust in a position that's a heartbeat away from the governor. You'll also hear from KLCC's own Rebecca Hansen-White about a new health concern in our region and a check-in with what's happening at Eugene's 4J School District. All that's coming up on Oregon on the Record. Secretary of State is perhaps an underappreciated job in Oregon State's government structure. The office handles a lot of important functions, including running our elections. And with an election coming up, two candidates on the Democratic side are vying for the job and hoping to not only win, but restore the public trust. Lauren Dake, a political reporter with OPB, you just did a big piece about the Secretary of State's office campaign. And thanks so much, first of all, for jumping on and talking with us.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Let's talk about your piece, your story. Especially, obviously, sometimes, you know, Secretary of State's office isn't maybe the biggest campaign or something that captures statewide attention. But of course, things are different here in Oregon. Maybe help us kind of remind us, if you will, sort of what happened with the last elected Secretary of State and how that sort of perhaps colors this particular campaign.
Right. Well, the last Secretary of State was Shamia Fagan, a Democrat, and she resigned just about a year ago this month. And she stepped down after Willamette Week reported that she had signed a lucrative contract with a cannabis company. And that's worth mentioning because the Secretary of State's office is in charge of auditing state regulations on cannabis businesses. So she signed that contract while she was Secretary of State, and it was just not a really good look. Yeah. And the owners of the cannabis company also, they were high profile Democratic donors. And pretty quickly, Fagan lost support. She lost trust, and people started calling for her to step aside. And it was a pretty shocking fall from grace because Fagan had been really a rising star within the Democratic Party in Oregon. Most people thought she would likely be governor one day. Mm-hmm. So now we have Tobias Reed and James Manning, who are running, two Democrats whose values are largely aligned and both whom are really largely running on a platform of restoring trust to this office. And you know, it's probably worth mentioning what this office does. It's really important. The Secretary of State oversees elections. They oversee audits. They audit state agencies. The person sits on the state's land use board. And in rare cases, this is a person that would take over as governor if something were to happen to the governor, or as in 2015, when former Governor John Kitzhaber was forced to resign, then Secretary of State Kate Brown stepped in and became governor.
Yeah. Seemingly never boring in sort of the executive landscape of our state. But it's interesting because, you know, in listening to and reading your piece, it seems like the candidates were almost trying to sort of be very conscientiously boring, that they almost wanted to take down the temperature associated with the Secretary of State's office. Talk a little bit about that, about the fact that they kind of want to, you know, come across as I don't know if wonky is the right word, but certainly they want a distance, not just from Shamia Fagan, but obviously distance from the heat that was on that position.
Yeah, I think that's right. So Tobias Reed, one of the candidates, he has a quote in my story saying, you know, I'm probably not the most exciting candidate you've ever talked to. Mm-hmm. And basically, you know, he's okay with that. And so is Senator Manning. And I think that the idea here is that they're just trying to run a professional, race where the attention is really on the issues, and the biggest issue just being that they want to restore credibility to this office that has seen a lot of turmoil in the last couple of years.
Yeah. I want to ask you this too, because obviously you're a political reporter and you cover a lot of state politics. We've gone through a lot of drama in our state politics. What's it sort of like as a political reporter? I mean, you mentioned, we had a governor who had to resign. We had a secretary of state who had to resign. We've had, walkouts in the legislature. I mean, I imagine maybe even just a decade or so ago, people might even characterize what's going on in Salem as fairly perfunctory and boring. It's not that way anymore, is it?
No, that's a good question. In fact, I was thinking doing this piece back in 2011. The big deal in Salem was that the House was split 30-30. So 30 Democrats, 30 Republicans, and we had two speakers of the House, a Republican, Bruce Hanna, who's from Roseburg, and Arne Roblin, a Democrat from the coast. And, the New York Times came in and wrote a story about how we had two House speakers and were evenly split. And that was really like that was the noteworthy news of that era, of that year. And yes, since then, we've had a governor resign. We've had a secretary of state resign. We've had the secretary of state who died while serving in office. There's just been a lot more turmoil in state politics. But I think if you look nationally, that seems to be the case in a lot of places. Politics has become rather dramatic lately.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Let me reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking with Lauren Daik. She's a political reporter with OPB, and she wrote a big piece and a big story about the Secretary of State's office campaign. So, speaking of the office, it's often seen as a launch pad for becoming governor. Talk about these two candidates, and as I understand it, they maybe have very different views on that top job.
Yeah, well, I'll start with Tobias Reed. So he is not a new face in Oregon politics. He actually just ran for governor against Governor Tina Kotek in the 2022 Democratic primary. And it's interesting because when Fagan was running for that seat, she was constantly asked, "Aren't you just, running for this job so that you can be governor?" Because the seat is often considered, a stepping stone for that, for the governor. Ship. But that theme hasn't really emerged as much this election cycle, maybe because it's obvious that Reed would like to be governor. He's been a state lawmaker. He served 2 years as a state treasurer and he can't run again. We all know he wants to be governor, but he did say that his interest in this role is genuine and that he feels like his experience having already managed a state office is very relevant. And then his challenger is James Manning. Manning is a state senator who represents the Eugene Springfield area. He was initially appointed to the state senate in 2016. He's been reelected twice. He has a really different background from Reed's. He served in law enforcement and then spent decades in the U.S. Army. And he said that that experience would help him in this role. He also does have a bit of a track record looking into, election issues. He pushed for paid postage on ballot envelopes. He called for protecting election workers from harassment while he was serving in the state legislature. And unlike Reed, he has made it very clear he has no interest in ever being governor and said that he's just running for this to be a public servant.
Do we have any polling, any numbers to suggest who's sort of in the lead in this particular in this primary election?
I don't know that there's been any polling, but Reed has brought in significantly more money than Manning, and that's obviously often a good indicator of who is leading in the race. It's not always, but Reed has brought in close to $500,000 to Manning's a little bit more than $100,000. And they both have a lot of wide-ranging endorsements, but I would say that Reed is also kind of leaning winning in that arena as well.
Okay. You know, Lauren, probably my last question for you is just obviously, you know, on the other side of the aisle, Republicans haven't had very much success sort of winning statewide office in Oregon in several decades. But of course, the one office they did win was Secretary of State. So, you know, once we get to the general, you know, if you could tell us about who might be the top Republican who's likely to emerge to challenge for the Secretary of State's office.
That's right. The last Republican Secretary of State was Dennis Richardson, and he died of brain cancer while serving, and he was unable to finish his term. And Richardson, he was a conservative Republican, but he had a lot of bipartisan support while he served as a state lawmaker. He was really respected by both parties. He served as the co-chair of the powerful Ways and Means, the Budget Writing Committee. The current frontrunner on the Republican side is Senator Dennis Lithicum. He's a Republican from Klamath Falls, and he doesn't really have the same bipartisan support that Richardson did. He is a election denier, and he is seeking statewide office after he was disqualified from running for the state Senate again because he participated in the legislative walkouts in 2023.
Okay. Another controversy that's befallen the state of Oregon. Lauren Dake, political reporter, does an amazing job for OPB. Thank you so much for coming on and talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Now we'll hear from one of our own reporters about a new health concern and get an update on what's going on at 4J. Rebecca Hansen-White, one of our reporters here at KLCC, thanks so much for coming in and talking to us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, you've been covering a lot of health and healthcare related stories recently, and one you've done this week is about whooping cough or pertussis, in which maybe many people don't realize is a big issue. Can you talk about your story and why it's such a big concern?
Yeah, so last I checked yesterday, there's been at least 19 cases of whooping cough identified here in Lane County. And likely there is a lot more that hasn't been detected yet because, you know, sometimes when you have a cough, there's so many respiratory illnesses out there, you might not realize what you have. And so you might be, oh, I just have spring allergies, or, oh, I've just got something that's not that bad, and you're out in the community spreading it. And, you know, it might not be dangerous to you as a healthy adult, but there are some people that are really vulnerable to whooping cough. And so when you're out there spreading it, you might be fine, but someone else could become seriously ill if they get it.
Yeah. And in your reporting, I imagine there's some real concern because, as you said, it can be very virulent. And like you said, I mean, people may not know they have it. I imagine some of the people you talk to are saying this is a pretty big deal.
Yeah. So the people most vulnerable are newborns. Newborns can't be vaccinated against whooping cough. So if you have a really young baby in daycare, if you're a grandparent, if you babysit or something, and then you go and you visit this person with a new baby, you could end up putting that baby in the hospital, or, you know, sometimes babies who get whooping cough die.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty dangerous for infants to get whooping cough. And it, I mean, the big places it spreads is daycare and is at schools.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting because, you know, we had Lane County's chief medical officer, Dr. Patrick Ludke, and he was talking about this along with some other things that are concerning to him. And he talked about the fact that this kind of sprung up pretty quickly. Is that kind of what you found as well?
I think it can spread. It's very, very contagious. Mm-hmm. And so I think with the fact that there's probably more circulating in the community than we know, and that people might be spreading it unknowingly, I think in the last week it has a really high, you know, reproductive rate, and
yeah,
so it can spread really quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so we're sort of at a level now in your reporting, when you talk to folks, are they concerned that it could get worse?
Yes, I think that in a couple of days we might hear a little bit more information. I think that there are people who are waiting tests, and the health department is also waiting on some test results from people out in the community who thought they might have it. And so we might get news in the next couple of days with a little better picture of how widespread it is in the community, but they know for sure that the cases that they found are not connected to each other, which means that there are people who have not, they don't know each other, and they're getting whooping cough from somewhere. And so that means there's spread that might be difficult to do contact tracing for across Lane County.
Yeah. You know, one of the many sort of side effects of coming out of COVID is something that a lot of times clinicians talk about, this sort of vaccine fatigue. And I know you say that newborns can't necessarily get vaccinated, but is there an issue with the fact that perhaps vaccine rates are going down in our county?
So in Oregon, there is a non-medical vaccine exemption. Mm-hmm. So if you have a philosophical reason or a religious reason, and the number of people that have been getting that exemption has been going up, not just since the pandemic, since before that, more people were requesting that vaccination exemption. So when there is a percentage of children in public schools who aren't vaccinated against whooping cough or a lot of other illnesses as well, they've got exemptions to it. And there are also, you know, younger kids in daycare who have some sort of non-medical exemption. So that number is definitely going up. If you look at state data, it is a lot higher than it was 5 years ago. That a pretty big percentage. It could be in some age groups in some areas, you know, as high as like 8 or 10% of kids aren't fully vaccinated. Wow. From various things. So it's not, you know, I don't have Lane County specific data. Sure. Right now, but if you look statewide, there is a lot of kids that aren't getting fully vaccinated against everything.
Yeah, interesting. I'm going to reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking to one of our own reporters at KLCC, Rebecca Hansen-White. I'm going to switch gears a little bit because, you know, you've also done a recent story about goings-on at 4J. And of course, you've covered 4J for a while, including, you know, the big story, the removal of the superintendent. But, you know, you just did a story about some accounting issues at the district. Can you talk a little bit about that story?
Yeah, so 4J, just like every other school district in the area, they do an annual audit. Every government has to do it to keep getting more government money. And so I think some of the issues that 4J had over the last few years is they've had really high staff turnover. And they've also gotten some new software that I don't think that maybe everyone was completely trained on, and they had some issues, I think, rolling it out. And so that has led, for the last 2 years, their audits being turned in late, and also auditors flagging some issues more this year that they need to do differently. And so they sent some recommendations to the school district to change the way they do some things to make sure that things are turned on in time, things are turned in correctly in the future. And so 4J's audit, and also they didn't find any issue of like wrongdoing. It was just, it was accidental issues is what they found.
Okay. But, you know, they're operating with an interim superintendent who used to be the superintendent of public instruction at the state, Colt Gill. This is kind of perhaps one of the first, I don't want to say controversy, but one of the first issues he's got to kind of manage through, isn't it?
So he addressed it at the last school board meeting, and I think he's already working on the changes that the state has asked them to make. And so I think some of the issues they flagged were people doing data input incorrectly, a spreadsheet that's editable at any time, and you don't know if it's been edited or not. So those types of things to really tighten things up to make sure these mistakes don't happen. And so some of those stuff was in the works of getting fixed before he got there. And some of these things right now in his first month in the job, he's implementing to tighten up their finances. And also, I think they're working on hiring more budget staff so they have enough people to do this job, and getting them some IT support.
Yeah. Well, and obviously, you know, we're getting close to, you know, school being out for summer, but I it'd be a good time to sort of check in and say, do you have any updates on the search for the superintendent? Because obviously the last superintendent, Andy Dye, was removed, left, however you want to say it. And so there's a search going on.
I've been keeping an eye on their agendas. And I think it's a process that takes some resources and takes some time to do right. And so I haven't seen anything new. Colt Gill will be the superintendent this next school year.
Okay.
So they do have him for now. They've got a temporary contract with him while they try to figure out what's next. So I haven't seen any updates for who their next superintendent is.
But for the next school year, they have someone in the top job.
They do.
Okay. Well, that's good. I guess, though, you know, they've been through a lot over at 4J. And I just didn't know if in your reporting, on the record, off the record, you know, is there a mood over there? What have you been able to determine in terms of how the rank and file staff is doing through all of these changes?
I think that all school districts, that the employees are kind of having a hard time right now because 4J isn't the only one that has leadership challenges. They're not the only ones that have budget issues or behavior problems. So I think that the turmoil and the staff turnover up top certainly didn't help the mood. But when I listened to the unions and the individual staff members talk, I think that they have an education assistant issue in which that they need more people to do not just the teaching in the classroom, but all the jobs that really support all the other teaching staff and, you know, bus drivers and all of those types of jobs. If you don't have enough people doing them, it makes everything so much harder.
Sure. Well, we've heard about so many labor shortages in a host of industries, and obviously education is certainly part of that. You know, Rebecca, probably my last question for you is because, you know, we're just, you know, weeks, days away from the May 21st election. As I understand it, voters in the district are going to vote on a levy. Could you just kind of remind us on what that levy is all about?
So it would be it's a renewal. So it's a renewal of a tax we're already paying right now, and it wouldn't increase it. It would just, you have to every 5 years. Do you want to keep it the same? And so it's a pretty big portion of the district's budget. I think it supports 200 positions roughly is the amount of money that is generated from this. And so I think that's $29 million roughly that it would raise. And so when voters make a decision, it'll be on, it's all for operations only. So this levy pays for school staff is what it pays for.
Okay, which is obviously very important. Well, Rebecca Hanson-White, one of our reporters here at KLCC who covers a host of issues, including health and education, thanks so much for coming in and talking to us.
Thanks for having me.
That's our show. In case you missed any of this program, all editions of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Next week, we're going to air a special show about the Eugene Emeralds Stadium Funding Ballot Initiative, and we'd love to hear from you about the issue. Email us at questions@klcc.org and let us know if you support or oppose the initiative. I'm Michael Dunn, and this has been Oregon on the Record from KLCC. Thanks for listening.